This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. McLean County Democratic Party Treasurer John Whalen says his party has a lot of energy.
A tremendous uptick in people wanting to get involved that we haven't seen in years. So that's very encouraging. I think that's a very direct result to the dissatisfaction with the election of President Trump and then the 3 years that we've had with under the current Governor Rauner.
There will be 9 contested county board seats next November. GLT's Ryan Denham has more. Holiday gift pets are often a bad idea, but not always. Laura Kennedy has more on Animal House. All that and a GLT News update on the way. This is Sound Ideas on GLT.
Support for the Sound Ideas podcast comes from listener contributions to GLT, with additional support from Country Financial Representative Justin M. Boyd. Information at justinmboyd.com. This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. For Democrats across the country, Donald Trump's election is a cloud over the country. Now there is a silver lining for them. Trump's election has sparked a surge in first-time political candidates running for office, especially women. That's playing out in McLean County, too, where Democrats are contesting county and state races like never before. They're even targeting longtime Republican state representatives Dan Brady and Keith Sommer. Monday was the candidate filing deadline. GLT's Ryan Denham caught up with McLean County Democratic Party Treasurer John Whalen about how anger over Trump's election is turning into more names on the ballot.
Well, I think it's very evident that we have got a very energized and motivated electorate out there, particularly on the Democratic side, which we've seen a tremendous uptick in people wanting to get involved that we haven't seen in years that I've been involved in the local Democratic Party here in McLean County. So that's very encouraging, and I think that's a very direct result to the dissatisfaction with the election of President Trump and then the 3 years that we've had with under the current Governor Rauner. So I think those are two motivating factors that have really driven it out, and we're really seeing a lot of activity and a lot of interest in local stuff. I looking at just this morning, I got to look at some of the filings that came out, and I was amazed at how many people have filed for precinct committeemen and all the positions that we've got. Like on the county board, we've got a lot of contested races that we've never had before. Usually it's a challenge for both parties to get people to go out and get petitions signed and run for a precinct committee person. This time we've got a lot more activity there and a lot going on there. So that's very encouraging.
Were there any surprises for you as you looked at the filings from yesterday?
Well, I guess there's a couple contested races and for precinct people in a couple places. I was surprised by that. We have a contested county board race, which kind of caught me off guard. So
are you talking about the Paul Segubiano?
Correct. That's the one that I noticed. And I haven't had a chance to look at them all in great detail, but I looked at them this morning, what I could find. And that kind of surprised me there. So, yes. Just based on the number of candidates we've been able to get in the past, it's a good problem to have if we're going to have some contested races. I think the more activity and the more people you have running for office, the better government we're going to get out of that, and the better candidates we'll have going forward. So I think that's a lot of people see that as a problem. I don't see that as a problem. I think that's what the primary process is for, and that's a healthy thing for us to do that. That's encouraging to me as a Democrat who's always been in the minority here in this community, in this county, and a lot of people that are Democrats or won't come out and really say about being a Democrat. There's a lot of people that are very reticent to say that. So I think this will be some encouragement for them to step up and get involved and do some other things and take some heart that, yeah, we can make a difference here. And then we can actually give the voters in this county a choice, in this community a choice. And I think that's going to give us all better government going forward.
What are some things that McLean County Democrats have done to convert the energy that you're seeing among folks who may be dissatisfied with Donald Trump's election and Governor Rauner's first term, converting that energy into actual candidates on the ballot?
Well, we've always had an active party, even though I hear it all the time. I didn't know there was any Democrats in McLean County, and I marched in the parade on Saturday, the Christmas parade, and we carried our banner, and I more than once or twice I heard people, I didn't know there was any Democrats in McLean County. And I said, well, yeah, we've been here for a long time. And I've had that discussion for a long time with locals here. We've always had a very open meeting process where we've met on our monthly basis, and sometimes we don't meet depending on the year. There's more activity going on. But we've always encouraged that type of involvement and wanted people to come and get involved in the party. So we've just continued that. I don't know that we've done anything different. The best thing that's motivated people has been the surprise, the great deal of upset that people feel about Donald Trump being elected. I think it's personally, it's an embarrassment to me as an American citizen, and as a challenge that a lot of people are struggling with right now. And I think a lot of people have, a lot of times locally, didn't think that their vote mattered in McLean County, so they would stay home and not get involved. And hopefully people are seeing if they do get involved that we can turn that around and have a real impact. I think one of the earliest signs you saw of that was in the township races that we had last year. I've run the caucus for the Democrats here in Normal Township for the last couple caucuses, and when the one prior to this, we had four people come up for our caucus. We had one person run for a trustee position, and they didn't get very far. This last time around, I had a room full of 75 or 80 people came out, and we were able to get a supervisor candidate, and we had four people run for trustee, and we got three of those elected along with the supervisor candidate. So I think you're seeing a real groundswell of people interested, people who have felt disenfranchised for a long time, finally getting involved and feeling encouraged enough to come out and get involved. So that's very encouraging to me. Other than that, I think the frustration with the state government that we've all felt, and for lots of reasons, there's plenty of blame to go around for that. But at the same time, we're not getting very far at that level. And I think so people are saying, hey, we need to look at some change. I think Trump was elected because it was a lot of people who had just frustrated with the process, and they think that they needed to make a change. I think some of them are having some buyer's remorse now on the way that change is. I fully agree that there's a lot of change that needs to be done at the federal level and the state level, but you've got to have some reasonable change done there. I don't know how to define that, and everybody defines that for themselves.
Several women, especially first-time candidates, are running on the Democratic side in 2018. Can you talk about the interest you've seen among women in your party?
That's where a lot of this is coming from. I looked at the list today, and there were several people on there that I have not had a chance to meet, some that I know I've met, but there's people that are coming out, and that's a real dynamic situation going on there, and I think a lot of that is a very much a direct result of some of the way, and I can't speak for women, but other than they, I think a lot of it is the feeling that the way things are being presented at a national level, particularly by our commander-in-chief, that's a real effect of that, and that's really motivating to the ladies in the community who are saying, hey, enough's enough. We're going to stand up and get involved in this. And I think that's very encouraging.
I saw on the McLean County Democrats Facebook page yesterday that 59 Democrats, which would be 168% increase, filed for Democratic precinct committeemen. Can you talk about what seeing that on the ground and seeing that build over time, what that will mean for your party in the years ahead?
Well, that's very encouraging. I think that gives us the ground troops, the soldiers on the ground to actually get out the vote in those precincts. If those guys run and are active and as a precinct committee person and actually help get out the vote in their precincts, that bodes well for us in the next election. Not just in the primary, they're going to do that in the primary and get their candidates and the people that they're supporting, but it's going to be very important. We get through the primary process, and then we all come together and unite as one party and try to elect other Democrats in the November election. That's what it's going to take. But that's how a campaign is won. It's not always about the money. It's about the ground troops that you've got out there to go out to knock on door to door, do the canvassing, get the information about your candidates. And then they also are important to make sure the vote gets out on the election day. If that's done properly, that could be done. We've always tried to do that, but we've always been, like most parties or any organization, has been hamstrung by the number of volunteers and the troops to do it and to coordinate it, because it's a big commitment to do that, and it takes a lot of time to prepare for it, and then it really takes a lot of time to enact it on the day of an election.
There are a lot of Democrats in a lot of different races now. You've got county board races, you've got countywide race, you've got some state lawmaker races. What are going to be the most important races for the McLean County Democratic Party in 2018? How do you prioritize them?
I don't know that I can prioritize them as the party. We're going to try to help all those all the candidates as best we can. I know we're very excited to have a countywide candidate. That's something that's been a struggle to do if we haven't had many of those very often.
And this is Nikita Richards, who's challenging incumbent Republican County Clerk Kathy Michael.
And the key is the more of those candidates you have, they bring their group behind them that supports them, then that helps build it for every candidate that's out there, particularly in as the more local. You always win these elections locally, motivating your people and getting your people out to vote. You can look historically and see how many votes does it normally take to win an election. If you get out to vote and get a number close to that, you've got a pretty good chance. The more candidates we have, I mean, we've got people running for state representative, a couple of those that have never happened in a long time here. That's going to help get out the vote and get the people who have like mind and want to see some changes and get some other Democrats out there elected. Those are all things that are going to be positive. The other thing you've got coming up is the governor's race. That's a big motivation. So those are the kind of cycles that you run into, and that's probably a reason that you've got a lot of, I mean, other than motivation because of who got elected last time, governor's race is going to be a big piece that drives a lot of this, and a lot of people wanted to get involved and see some change and get some people out there. That helps us build a bench for other things, for people to get some experience. That's how people are very reluctant. They all have strong opinions about issues, but most of us are reluctant to get out and run and stick your neck out there and run for election. But if you have this kind of enthusiasm and stuff, then we can get people to take certain positions and run for that. They learn something, they get confident about what they're doing. Then we can, maybe we have some people to maybe step up and do some other things too. So that's to me, that's one of the biggest long-term issues that this is going to help build us a group of people who will have the experience, they have the knowledge and the confidence to step up into some other positions when those opportunities present themselves.
And you mentioned two longtime state lawmakers, Dan Brady and Keith Sommer. They have contested primary or general election opponents for the first time in a long time, a decade or more for both of them. Do you really think that Dan Brady and Keith Sommer are vulnerable in 2018?
Anything could happen. If Donald Trump can get elected, anything can happen. So, I'm still trying to come to grips with that, so nothing will surprise me, to be honest with you.
That's John Whalen, the treasurer of the McLean County Democrats. I'm Ryan Denham.
McLean County Republican Party Chair Chuck Erickson was in studio yesterday sharing his take on this week's candidate filing deadline. You can hear that interview now at WGLT.org or the NPR One app. This is Sound Ideas.
Support for GLT comes from Justin M. Boyd, Country Financial Representative, proud to serve you from his new office in historic downtown Bloomington. Justin offers life insurance options to protect your family and leave a lasting legacy. Information at justinmboyd.com. This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org.
Still to come on Sound Ideas, preparing the ground for winter. GLT's Grow, Laura Kennedy, and Patrick Murphy. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Governor Bruce Rauner was among the hundreds of politicians who filed paperwork to get on the 2018 ballot. In this week's Illinois Issues Report, columnist Charlie Wheeler reviews the Republicans' first 3 years in office. Reporter Mary Hansen talked with Wheeler about the governor's reelection prospects.
So, Charlie, what has Rauner's first 3 years in office been like? In your view, what has he accomplished?
He came in with a very ambitious agenda, but he was not able, in my judgment, to realize the old cliche, the best is the enemy of the good. Instead, he chose to go to war, basically, with the Democratic majorities, and he has portrayed Mike Madigan as the root of all evil for Illinois. For all of the fighting with Madigan, it really hasn't accomplished a whole heck of a lot.
And the anti-Madigan theme seems to be almost the centerpiece of Rauner's campaign for reelection. Could attacking Madigan work? Is the House Speaker that unpopular among voters?
I think his poll numbers are even worse than what the governor's are. On the other hand, when people go to vote in November and they look at the ballot, only people in one particular legislative district on the southwest side of Chicago into the suburbs will see the name Michael Madigan. Everybody else won't see Michael Madigan on the ballot. Bruce Rauner will be on every ballot, however. So his problem is he has to try and connect Madigan, with everybody else on the ballot, every other Democrat on the ballot. He really doesn't have that greater record that he can tout, so he has to remind people, I'm not Mike Madigan.
And when you say he doesn't have a great record or that he hasn't accomplished anything, what are you talking about? What hasn't he been able to do?
For 197 of the years that we've been a state, we've been able to enact a budget. But Governor Rauner got locked into this battle with the Democrats, and so we didn't have a budget for FY16 or FY17. Finally, we have one for FY18, not because of Bruce Rauner. It's in spite of Bruce Rauner, because a number of Republicans voted with the Democratic majorities to override Rauner's veto of a budget plan that Democrats had passed, reasoning that the governor's veto was causing harm to their local schools, to human service providers and state facilities, universities in their districts. And so rather than stick with the governor, they voted for their constituents.
In your column, you also discuss Governor Rauner's role in overhauling how schools are funded in Illinois, and that his veto of a new formula almost derailed those efforts. But in the end, he and legislators were able to come to an agreement. That's something that the governor is touting as a success. Are there any other initiatives that you would characterize as successful?
I would say probably the most notable successes he's had have come in the area of criminal justice reform, doing something about the chronic overcrowding in our state prisons. So the governor proposed making changes that would be smarter in terms of how we dealt with people who are incarcerated, with the goal of reducing the prison population by 25% by the year 2025. This was a bipartisan cooperative effort among Republicans and Democrats and the governor. And had the governor used those same skills and approached these issues in the same fashion on some of the other items that were on his plate, I think he would have had a lot more success and he'd have a lot more to talk about in his reelection bid.
That was Charlie Wheeler, the director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois at Springfield. He talked with reporter Mary Hansen. This is Sound Ideas.
My name is Brian from Portland, Oregon. I love listening to Bullseye when there's someone on whose work I'm familiar with because I always learn something new about them.
I'm Jesse Thorne. This week, J.K. Simmons of Whiplash, Spider-Man, and those insurance commercials. Plus, the great stand-up comedian Solomon Giorgio. That's on the next Bullseye from MaximumFun.org and NPR.
Listen Saturday at 11 a.m. on GLT. News and ideas.
Support for GLT comes from State Farm Bank, offering mortgage consultation and rates to help you move from renting to owning your home. Additional information available by calling 1-855-891-HOME. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender. NMLS ID 139716. This is GLT.
Still to come on Sound Ideas, holiday pets and Animal House with Laura Kennedy. Before you settle in for the winter, there's still a few items on your gardening to-do list. Patrick Murphy has more on this edition of GLT's Grow.
Old man winter is on his way. Let's get ready for the old boy. I'm Laura Kennedy, and this is GLT's Grow, your source for practical gardening advice. From our expert in the field, from the Illinois State University School of Biological Sciences and curator of the Fell Arboretum, it's Patrick Murphy. Hello, Murph.
Hi, Laura.
Today on GLT's Grow, we are getting ready for Old Man Winter. And by that, I mean not just putting on your parka and your gloves. We got to get like our tools ready and our gardens ready. What are some things we need to be doing, Murph?
Yeah, there are some things we can do. So we can sit on our keisters and look out the window with our feet up in front of the fire and not have to do anything.
Sounds good.
That's kind of my idea of successful winter gardening is to gaze upon my hard work for a couple months.
Well, put the work in now and enjoy the benefits later.
At Grow Corporate, we always like to work from the top down to make it easier to project manage and plan for your activities. So let's start with the roof and the gutters, because they're related to the drainage issues that you could face during these winter months with rain and the snow and melting snow. It's important that your gutters and your downspouts are clear so that when a deluge does come, it doesn't just roll right over the edge of your gutters and then pound this line into your planting areas right up next to the house.
Mm-hmm.
It's bad for your landscaping, but it's equally bad for your home and the foundation of your home. And in addition to those gutters and those downspouts, if you have rain barrels that you're using that are fed by your downspouts, now is the time to set those up so that they drain and they're a catch, because you're probably not going to be dumping water out of those rain barrels onto your garden or landscape this winter. So you can either let the overflow work, which I think is a little dangerous, because then you could have a 50-gallon ice cube right there, right?
Mm.
So the best thing to do is leave the little seal cock at the bottom open, put a little length of hose on there, and let that water collect in the rain barrel and then redistribute into the proper drainage profile at your property. Not pointing at a sub-level basement window, right? So you want to make sure we don't get in trouble with poorly draining landscape and gutters and stuff.
Good point.
So you can jump from the roof to the tree and pretend you're
not
a squirrel.
Not literally.
Yeah, and pretend you're a squirrel. But for our trees, we want to remove all of our old stakes and irrigation bags. So if your tree was planted this spring and it's still got stakes on it, might be too early to take it off. Maybe you want to wait until after the spring. But if it's been there for a year
right.
or more, take them off.
Okay.
If you've had the irrigation bag there to help you through this dry summer and fall we've had in the Midwest or elsewhere, time to put those things away. Make sure there's no little mices or anything inside of them, because they do end up in there.
Yeah, if you leave that on there, the water can freeze around your tree trunk.
It can, and it can also give your tree trunk some unneeded protection, so that when it does come off, you could have sun scald. So it's better to do that now and let that lower trunk kind of get acclimated and used to being unprotected and exposed. So for your trees, too, you should also be in the beginning of your dormant pruning plan of action.
Mm.
So some people are very avid gardeners and have a kind of a map to their landscape in their mind at all times. And interesting to me in all the years in this field, discussing this with gardeners that are intimately aware of their landscape, and they could probably tell you exactly where am I going to prune,
mm-hmm.
what needs to be pruned. Dormant pruning is a great time to remove the sucker growth and water sprouts. Those are the tall, upright branches that grow off of the base of the trunk or the top of limbs and branches. It's easy to see them now because the leaves are just about gone.
You're listening to GLT's Grow, our weekly gardening show for those who like to get their hands dirty this week, getting ready for Old Man Winter.
So Old Man Winter's preparations still have us wrapping up the trees. So when you've done all your stake removal and your dormant pruning, you have to ask yourself, should I water?
Mm-hmm.
Should I water? Because
yeah.
right now here in the Midwest, it's in the 50s and 60s. Actually, the grass is actually growing in some locations still.
Yes.
Mowing is not the best idea at this time, but it's just evidence to show that the soil temperatures are allowing for root growth. So when the grass is growing, your roots for your woody plants and trees can still be active. So if you encounter this kind of warm weather, and this is the official Indian summer here in the Midwest and here at ISU, because we've had some freezing nights already, and now here it is warm again. Indian summer is a good time to do the extra watering on your trees, particularly your conifers, your cone-bearing needled plants. So we can also add mulch to the basal flares, especially if it's a new tree. We want to keep that root ball and the ground right next to it nice and insulated. And then we can get started on the shrubs. We're going to do that same assessment for our dormant pruning there. Not all shrubs are dormant prune friendly. There's just certain ones, so make sure you get your plan together. We always have to mention seed collection, because a lot
yes.
of people are out there are growing edible landscapes, have native plants, and it's a good time to collect those seeds for your own production or for sharing. And the same assessment for your trees you're going to make on your shrubs about watering and mulch. But there's one thing that I always like to do for my shrubs, particularly my broadleaf evergreens, so that's my boxwoods, rhododendrons, azalea, and anything else that is just an opportunity to give it some protection with the use of anti-desiccants.
Okay.
So we've talked about those before. They prevent
sprays.
Cold water. It's a spray. You can spray it on deciduous plants and protect their little skeleton so it doesn't burn during really extreme changes in temperature.
Okay.
Because that's when we get in a little trouble there. Bedding, we're going to approach it the same way as our shrubs, except the difference with the bedding is we want to keep it clear of leaf debris. Oftentimes bedding is up near the house, near doors, near entryway. And if they fill up full of leaf litter and stuff, Laura, that gives the ground squirrels and the mice a place to hide right by the house.
Well, we don't want that. But what about our tools, Murph? Anything we should be doing?
We should actually, when we finish doing all of our work, our hand tools and things like that, we want to put them in the shed or put them in storage clean. So put the handles put the handles away clean. So if they've got, you know, your toil marks on there from your gloves and your dirty hands, that can come off with a little bit of water and sandpaper just real quick. And grow, we've oftentimes recommended having a bucket of sand in your shed or wherever you store your tools, because it's a great way to cleanse the blade.
It exfoliates.
The plants, it does. And then if you really, really have some heirloom tools, I have a few heirloom tools that I love, you want to give them a little light coat of oil for storage. And you want to also get your pruners, your saws, your tree tools, you want to get them ready for an unexpected use.
Oh, you mean like if you lose a branch during a winter storm or something?
Yeah, that's right. So your loppers, your chainsaw.
There's something called a lopper?
Loppers are like a pruner with long handles.
Cool.
And they're for cutting branches that are bigger around than your finger, you know, because a handheld pruner, those are for finger size or smaller. These tools all need to be sharp and clean when you put them away all the time. But for this winter, you want to get them prepared in a manner so that they are ready to go. And for chainsaws, that may mean keeping it in the garage with no fuel in it because, you know, we don't want a fuel hazard in the house or next to the house. But if the saw is nice and warm instead of ice cold when you pour that fuel into it to go and clean that limb that fell across the driveway, it's going to start right up and you'll be back in the front of the fireplace before you know it.
Okay, great advice, Murph. Let's get that taken care of before Old Man Winter gets his grips on us. Now, next week, you had actually mentioned mice during the show. Next week on GLT's Grow, we're going to be dealing with those nibbling rodents. And if you've got a garden question or problem that you would like Murph to take on, you know what? We want to hear from you. Go to our website, submit your question. There's a form to fill out there. And if you have a photo that goes along with your question, we would love to have that from you as well. Just send that question along to us here. You can submit it online at wglt.org/grow.
Get more gardening advice when you download the Grow podcast weekly at iTunes or wglt.org. This is 89.1 and WGLT.org, Bloomington Normal's public media. Get one of the six must-have items in the GLT shop this holiday season. Find the perfect GLT gift. The GLT fan in your life just might need extra caffeine. Our double-walled insulated coffee tumbler might be the answer. Or forget stockings and stuff your gifts in a classic public radio tote bag. Place orders by December 6th, today, to get gifts before the 25th. And see the rest of the holiday must-haves and much more at wglt.org/shop. This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Wonder what holiday gift to give that special senior in your life? Forget the box set of Golden Girls or another fruitcake. A pet might be the answer. GLT's Laura Kennedy has more on this edition of Animal House.
Seniors are going to the dogs and cats and even some ferrets, birds, and fish. The benefits for older folks to have pets are multiple and well documented, but some seniors actually hold back from pet ownership. They can be under the misapprehension that they're just too old to have a pet anymore. Not so, says Dr. Matt Fraker of the Prairie Oak Veterinary Center in Normal. In fact, a pet might be just the furry tonic some seniors need.
When you're looking at our geriatric population, our cognitively functioning geriatric population, we hear from these folks very often as they're getting older. You know, they'll lose an animal. And then they might be, the pet owner might be at an age where it is a legitimate concern that they will outlive a pet if they adopt one. And so they use that as an excuse to not have a pet. And really, there's a very solid argument out there that one of the populations that most needs this companionship are the elderly.
Why is that?
Well, you think about a lot of the situations the elderly find themselves in. And again, we're not saying if you have a grandfather who has dementia or Alzheimer's, go get him a bunch of cats. That's not what we're talking about.
Please don't. Yes, please don't do that.
Not a good idea. And we actually do deal with that occasionally. Older people who are cognitively with it, you know, they're very often have lost a significant other, or they are a little bit far removed from the families that take care of them, or they're watching their friends, they're losing their friends more frequently. So there's a lot of lonely pressures on the older populations that other populations don't face. And the companionship of a pet that's a really great place to have that companion, to have all those sort of unconditional emotional feedback that pets provide.
And there's also that wonderful thing where the pets help them feel needed, because, you know, as you get older, you kind of, my kids don't need me anymore, people don't need me anymore. Well, Fluffy needs me. I got to clean Fluffy's box, I got to feed Fluffy, and it gives you that feeling of being needed.
It does, and it's not a false feeling.
It's a real thing.
Yeah, and keep in mind, you don't have to dress up and get in a car and go someplace to find this companionship. It's always in the house. You can plop down in your recliner, watch your TV, and there's your dog or your cat that's with you. We see dogs provide a positive exercise influence on the elderly, getting them out, walking them, getting folks to move around more. There is an element of providing, you know, as you provide for your estate and if you provide for all these other things that you will want to try to provide for a pet. And there's many, you have resources, family members. I do know some veterinary hospitals where people will actually give us we've done this, where they write it out. They write, hey, if something happens to us, this is what we'd like done with our pet. And
mm-hmm. You got to make arrangements for your
exactly.
pet.
Exactly. I mean, you do need to make arrangements so you at least know who is making the calls on your pet should you pass away and still be in possession of a pet. But that's a small detail, and it's pretty easy to make sure that pet's going to be okay. I think a lot of these people are robbing themselves of a companionship that they really, really would help them flourish and they could use and need by telling themselves, I'm not getting another dog. He's going to outlive me or she's going to outlive me, another cat, another dog. When in fact, that's a really critical time in someone's life to have that perfect companionship that a pet provides.
And they do say that having a pet, you know, just petting an animal can lower your blood pressure. So if you've got health issues with regards to that, having a pet can help you out with that. And if you're at all worried about the costs of pets, you know, and feeding them and that sort of thing, there's all kinds of pet food assistant programs out there. You can just check in your local community. Even Meals on Wheels in some communities has Meals on Wheels for pets.
Oh, do they really?
Yeah, so they can help out elderly that way. If you're feeling like, well, I'm on a limited income, I can't afford it. Well, there are resources out there these days because people, as you're saying, people realize the benefits of having pets, emotional and physical. They give us wonderful things. But what are the best pets, Matt, do you think, for a senior person?
I don't think that the pet decision-making process necessarily changes. It's so funny how often we see people pick pets that they would be if they were a pet. You know, you see a human and you see their dog and you're like, that's a match made in heaven, you know? And whereas people who are really attracted to cats are, it's not so much a breed specific, but we all know that there are cat people and there are dog people, and
yes.
The cat people are all sort of similar. The dog people sort of break down into the breeds that they get. But it's funny. We had one of our nicest clients ever, and he was a veteran of D-Day. He was a hunter, and his dog of choice, even into the end of days, which he lived into his 90s, was a golden retriever because mm-hmm. of the hunting, because of companionship, and he wasn't intimidated at all by the size of the dog. Golden retrievers are always sort of the go-to breed when we talk about.
They are so popular.
A breed that's not going to cause a problem. Go with a golden retriever. But you know, but it's sort of the same thing where some of the elderly say, "Well, I'm going to have to get a small dog." Well, sometimes small dogs can be a little bit more difficult to handle than a 70-pound sporting breed. So it's sort of like still go with what you know and go with your heart. Don't be forced into, "Well, I better get this pet because I'm getting decrepit or whatever." I think people should still pick the pets that they know and love. You had mentioned a solid concern about cost and affording animals. And this isn't a criticism. This is a fact. We see everybody of every age take pets in who can't afford them. It's frustrating and it's hard to argue. So we see college students who get dogs and cats and they don't have any ability to take care of them. We see families who may be struggling check to check and they're getting several pets. And on the one hand, it's really hard to deny any human being that companionship. It's on the other hand, you know, there's some argument maybe you shouldn't be getting pets if you can't afford them. I think that's okay to apply that argument to families that have all sorts of responsibilities or kids in college. I think the elderly is the place where you figure it out and make it work, because that companionship could be so critical in sort of those sunset years. That could be the most important companionship you have.
That's Dr. Matt Fraker of the Prairie Oak Veterinary Center in Normal. He does offer one caveat regarding pets and seniors, and that's parrots. While these birds are popular and fun pets, caring for them can be challenging. Plus, parrots are very, very long-lived. Many can live up to 50 years or more, which means they can not only outlive their senior owners, but possibly those who inherit the bird as well. A more reasonable choice is the Animal House Pet of the Week. It's Carter. This year-old tricolor hound mix is one laid-back canine who wants nothing more than to sit at your feet while you watch Netflix. Carter is also happy to keep you active and will display his impeccable leash manners while out for a walk. You can find Carter at the Humane Society of Central Illinois. I'm Laura Kennedy.
If you have a pet-related question for one of our Animal House team of experts, let us know at WGLT.org. This is Sound Ideas. Celebrate if you have an idea on celebrating the holidays, try GLT with two exclusive programs and NPR and other special programming. We're bringing you the annual Bloomington Normal holiday tradition, The Sounds of Christmas. Sponsored by State Farm Insurance, features some of the best talent in the community. Here at Friday, December 23rd at noon and 6, also at noon and 6 on Thursday. Enjoy the ISU production of It's a Wonderful Life, the radio play. Find a complete holiday program schedule at WGLT.org. This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Joe Borbély and Mike Klug of Bloomington's Jacked Up in the Empty Bottles say bands are looking back to bands today. looking back to bands like the Beatles for inspiration. They cite the third and fourth Stone Temple Pilots album, Tom Petty and Miles Nielsen, as just some of the artists who've taken inspiration from the Fab Four. Saturday night at the Castle Theater, Jacked Up will play Beatles covers during the annual Silver Ball fundraiser concert for Toys for Tots of McLean County. Warbly was born 6 years after the Beatles broke up. He tells GLT's John Norton about his Beatles entry point.
It's funny you ask that. We both have a mutual friend who, by fifth grade, he was the biggest Beatles fan I ever knew. He had older brothers that played instruments, and they must have liked him a lot. And I think still to this day, this dude probably, it's his probably still his favorite band. So that was my first introduction to him. I think the first song he brought to my attention was Maxwell's Silverhammer.
Was it an immediate, hey, yes?
For me, no, it wasn't.
It took a while to grow.
It wasn't, yeah. It was more like when I got into high school and could appreciate the depth of the lyrics and everything and could appreciate more of their place in history. I think people that don't really dig the Beatles don't know or don't understand what they did for modern music.
Hang on to that thought. I want to get to that. Mike, how about your introduction to the Beatles?
Well,
do you remember?
First, I want to say the one thing about that I super agree with. The Beatles were so ahead of their time. They did so much to shape what we think of as music now. As we've been going through and listening to all these songs with new ears, you know, because you're learning them instead of just enjoying them, Ringo is such a heavy drummer. Like, and especially for what was going on then, it was just revolutionary, you know. And when I was listening to that as a child, I remember thinking that it was rudimentary, but it's definitely not. And he's definitely pushing boundaries that people weren't even thinking about then. Now, as far as your other question, our best friend Nils, who's this huge Beatles fan, that was a thing that he and I had in common because my mom is the biggest Beatles fan that I've ever known.
Okay.
She was 14 when the Beatles came to America in 1964, had all the 45s. I remember listening to all those as a little kid. Like, my brother would just play I Want to Hold Your Hand 45 again and again and again and again and again and again on the record player at my grandparents' house. When I think of music, everything else is secondary behind the Beatles. Like, they're the number one band. Not necessarily the thing that I listen to the most, but they're the number one rock and roll band in the world, in the history of the world. And there are some big bands out there.
You talked about Ringo, Mike, and just how a new appreciation for Ringo that you receive. Is there an individual Beatle for you, Joel, that...
For me, there really isn't. Like, I love the fact that they all have their place in the group. I appreciate that for what it is. I think that's really cool in that they gave each other the space to work. And that's something that for this show that I was very conscious of giving away parts, especially like singing and stuff like that. I made sure that every band member had a chance to say, I want to sing this song and make it theirs, you know. So
I agree. The space, like they create so much space. So as we're learning all these songs, you know, as the lead guitar player, I get to play all these George parts. Jeff Young, our drummer, was pointing out how it's really interesting that, we wanted to make sure to get some songs that all of them wrote and all of them sing, too, you know, all four of the Beatles. It's really interesting on George's songs that George writes and sings, almost universally, he has somebody else play the solos. It's apparently common knowledge, but until 2 weeks ago, I had no idea that Eric Clapton plays on My Guitar Gently Weeps.
Yeah,
specifically plays a Les Paul. So it's like double incognito.
Do you guys want to give us a quick preview of a song that you might play on Saturday night?
Sure. Why don't we do that George tune?
While My Guitar Gently Weeps. Mike's got a look on his face like, I don't know, man.
I didn't bring my Les Paul. But I'll try that.
All right.
I look at you all, see the love that's sleeping, while my guitar gently weeps. Yeah, that's the part.
Jacked Up in the Empty Bottles. They're playing Beatles songs at the Silver Ball fundraiser on Saturday night at the Castle Theater. It's a fundraiser for Toys for Tots from McLean County. Joe Borbally and Mike Klug in studio. You told me it's going to be a six-person band.
Yeah.
You guys aren't normally a six-person band, are you?
We are now. Just recently, okay, so knowing we were going to do this Beatles show, we brought in a keyboard player just for the show, and it immediately went so well that we were like, permanent member.
Who's this one?
So we got Jennifer Booker Smith to play with us, and it's the, you know, the classic twofer. She's a great singer and a great keyboard player, so we got two amazing sounds that we didn't have before in one person.
We've actually been kind of wishing for this member for a long time, years now. We've always said, like, if we add anything, it's going to be keys and a female voice, and we got a two for one. So,
and there's so many Beatles songs to choose from for Saturday night. How did you go about choosing?
Okay.
Early, middle, late Beatles, all of the above?
There are 237 Beatles songs, original Beatles songs that they wrote and recorded and released, not counting the 172 covers that they recorded and released.
Okay.
So that's 409 songs. We get 75 minutes. So right away when we were talking about this, I was like, there's no way we can do everybody's favorite song. We can't even do all the number one hits. We have to pick the songs that we want to do that make us happy, because we'll be able to do another Beatles set next year with all new material and have it be just as awesome. So we got to do all the cool stuff. My brother calls me up and he's like, hey, are you doing Fill in the Blank song? That's my favorite. I'm like, nope. He's like, how about this one? This is my other favorite.
Sorry.
Nope, sorry. We're not doing either of those.
So how did you choose then?
Well,
we had a battle royale in the band room.
We did.
We did. We had some knives and armor and just went at it. And last man standing got to choose.
We had to make sure that all six of the band members got to do their favorite song. You know, it's like I say, sorry, Jesse, you're not in the band. You can't pick. That's my brother's name is Jesse.
Okay. So is essentially the almost decade of Beatles or original material, are you covering the breadth of the depth?
We've got some of this, some of that. We've got some stuff off a lot of different albums.
Michael Klug there, Joe Borbally, Jacked Up in the Empty Bottles in the GLT studios, getting ready for the Silver Ball fundraiser on Saturday night. Are Beatles songs any more or less difficult to play than other pop rock songs?
As a vocalist, the words for songs like I Am the Walrus or
Come Together,
they're so nonsensical that it's like, they're, you know, many stories, like basic songwriting says it should go from point A to point B. But some of these tunes are so weird. As a vocalist, for me, it's really hard to memorize those lyrics.
A thing that I've noticed that's really cool in relation to your question is the specifics of song construction and how they'll have this part, and then they'll have this other thing that separates it so that when you bring back the chorus, it seems so much cooler because you went to this weird place that nobody would even think of. Like, they really are brilliant. There's a reason that they had as much success as they did.
Well, guys, it's great to have you in studio. Everyone's looking forward to Saturday night. You got one more song in you before you leave?
We
can do one.
Joe Borbally and Mike Klug have Jacked Up in the Empty Bottles, 2/6 of the band, who will play Beatles songs Saturday night at the Silver Ball fundraiser. It's a fundraiser for Toys for Tots of McLean County.
I feel like it's important to note, too, that we do have a band coming out of Chicago, the Steepwater Band, to play the Rolling Stones. So be ready for our cash battle. We're going to finally solve the Beatles versus Stones conundrum, but it's a cash battle. So we're going to have some buckets or something set up where you can vote with your dollars about who's your favorite band. Not reflecting on Jacked Up in the Empty.
Just the Beatles and the Stones.
The Beatles and the Stones.
Two other points that I want to throw out. There is an after party across the alley at Diggers where Wildermore is going to do The Who.
And we're going to talk to Aaron in a couple of days.
Yes, that's great.
I love that guy.
Yeah,
great.
In addition to that, I think it's really important to throw out Morgan Schulte. She's putting this together for all these kids. Like, she works like 9 jobs to help kids. She's amazing. Thanks, Morgan.
What do you got up your sleeve?
We're going to do a little
Well, you know, right now in the news, you might see some stuff about Russia. So we're going to play a song called Back in the USSR.
Oh, that song.
Yeah.
1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4.
Last night, on the way, the paper bag was on my knee. Man, I had a dreadful flight. I'm back in the USSR. You don't like-
Joe Warbly and Michael Klug of Jacked Up and the Empty Bottles covering the Beatles back in the USSR. All six members of Jacked Up will plug in to play Beatles covers Saturday night for the Silver Ball at the Castle Theater. It's a fundraiser for McLean County Toys for Tots of McLean County. In addition to proceeds benefiting the charity, you may bring a new unwrapped toy to the show to be distributed to needy kids in McLean County.
Back in the U.S., back in the U.S., back in the USSR. Bow, 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 bow. Well, the Ukraine girls really knocked me out. They leave the West behind. Bow, 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 bow. And Moscow girls make me sing and shout. That Georgia's always on my, 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 my mind.
Thanks for choosing Sound Ideas on WGLT Normal and WGLT.org. Our website is where you can find the full Sound Ideas podcast and the individual stories and interviews today from Ryan Denham, John Norton, and Laura Kennedy. Let us know what you think of Sound Ideas. Post comments at facebook.com/WGLTFM. Our email address is news@WGLT.org. Tweet about the show. Use the hashtag Sound Ideas. We're all at WGLT News. I'm Charlie Schlenker.
Come and keep your comrade warm. I'm back in the USSR. Don't know how lucky you are, boys. Back in the USSR.
This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org, Bloomington Normal's public media.